Not guilty, Your Honor.
I'm alcoholic Ronnie Fox. I'm sober by the grace of God in the program Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm glad to be here tonight. I want to especially welcome the new people. Thank you. You know, when you're new and you come to Alcoholics Anonymous, you feel really, really, really different. I mean, alcoholics always feel different, but when you're new, you feel different. And you think that nobody knows how you feel. You think that nobody knows what you're going through. You think that you're the only one who ever came into a room of people that look like they are okay. You know, but you feel deep down inside like you're all screwed up and everybody else has got it going on. You know, well, I know for a fact how that feels because I felt that same way. You know, I walked into a room of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm sure, like some of you, I didn't really come here to get sober. You know, I came, my wife had thrown me out. I was about ready to lose my business and everything that I had. And I came to Alcoholics Anonymous because I figured if I came to a few meetings, maybe she would see that I was trying to do something and let me back in the big bed. And it worked, you know. It worked. You know, I got back and... And, you know, everything was okay as long as I was going to those meetings and really pretending like I wanted what you had. You know, I was going to the meetings. I was going to a few meetings. And I had a book. And that's not enough. You know, going to a few meetings and having a book just doesn't seem to be enough. It wasn't enough for me. Because that day came when that guy came in my shop and said, Ronnie, I got the kind, and I was gone, you know. So, you know, if you're new, there's a lot of people here that have been here a long time, and they know how to stay here. And that's what you want to do is you want to find out how to stay here. We all know how to get here. I mean, you know, you've already done everything required to get here. You don't have to do nothing else. It's staying here that seems to be the difficult part for us, you know. And what I found that works is finding somebody who knows how to stay here and having them take me and do the things that they do. And I had a guy that came and took me and did the things, took me with him when he did the things that he did, and I've been able to stay here, you know, so... You know, look for those people who are smiling. The old ones, usually. and ask them this question. Will you help me? You know, and I guarantee you won't find... I bet you can't find nobody in here to say no. So, you know, I just hope that that you're able to stay here. You know, find somebody that knows how to stay here and ask them to help you. So... You know, my sobriety date is February 27th, 1991, and my home group is the Great Fact Group. It meets on Thursday night in La Mesa, and it's the best meeting in the world. And if you don't think that your home group is the best meeting in the world, our meeting's in the schedule. So you can come visit us. My sponsor's here. Thank you. I come from a strong line of sponsorship. You know, the guy that 12-stepped me had a sponsor, and he's here. And he 12-stepped me, and he brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous. And fortunately, by the time he brought me here, I didn't necessarily want to be here, but I didn't want to be where I was either. So, you know, I was born in Los Angeles. My story is not unlike many others, but it's got a few little nooks and crannies that are unique to me. And one of them is that my mom was raped, and I'm the product of that. And my mom was white, and as a young boy, you know, I had a lot of things going on in my head. I didn't know quite how to deal with the things that were going on in my head. I didn't know. I could never talk to my mother about my father, because anytime I broached that subject, she never wanted to talk about it. So I never got any time to talk to her about the questions that I had. And you know, growing up, when I grew up, I was born in 47. So in that time, you know, there was a lot of unrest, and it wasn't all that normal to see a black kid with white mother, and you know, I dealt with a lot of issues like that too, and you know, and I always felt a little different than everybody else looked. You know, I don't know, they might have felt just like me, but they didn't look that way. And so I you know, I was always a little uncomfortable. And And I remember I was 13, and there was a guy that lived a few doors down, and his family was having some kind of party, and we went over there and we stole a couple beers, and I drank them beers, and you know what? It's been 52 years ago, and I remember the flavor. I remember the taste. I remember how cold it was, but most of all, I remember what it did for me. It made me not feel the way I was feeling prior to drinking that beer. You know, and that's all I ever wanted, was not to feel that way, not to feel different and uncomfortable. And we went out on a hunt that night to find her. I didn't know where she was. I didn't know who she was. But we looked until the effects of the beer ran out. You know, that was the beginning of a pattern in my life. I found that alcohol somehow, for some reason, gave me a sense of ease and comfort from the very start. So, you know, I grew up there in L.A., like I said, and I drank like most young kids do, I guess, that are drinking. You know, I would sneak away on sometimes, and me and some of the boys would go get a bottle of wine, and we'd go somewhere and drink a bottle of wine, you know, and talk about all of our exploits that never happened. And you know, I got married young. I got married. I was 18, and you know, I grew up in, like I say, in a home where there was no male figure. I had nobody to emulate. I didn't know what a husband was supposed to be, look like, do, or act like, or anything else. So getting married, you know, I didn't know what I was supposed to do. I knew some of the things that I was supposed to do, and those things I tried to do real a lot. and nobody had to tell me. But some of the other stuff, like come home after work and that kind of stuff, you know, I struggled with. And you know, and not too long after we got married, we had a little girl. You know, I was very fortunate. I had been early on. I started learning a trade, and about the time this little girl came along, I was able to buy this business, and it was just a little business, but it was a little business more than I was really knew how to deal with. And so now I had this wife that I didn't know what to do with. Well, I knew some of the stuff to do with, but and then I had this business that I had no. I knew how to do what it was I needed to do, but I had no business training. And I had a little baby, and I certainly had no knowledge of how to be a father. And so, you know, I'd go to work, and I didn't have any supervision. I didn't have anybody there to watch me. So, you know, I found that I could drink as much as I wanted to, anytime I wanted to. And I did, and I found that I wasn't coming home from work on a regular basis, and you know, I'd drink, and I'd go to the neighborhood bars and stuff and hang out, and you know, And I didn't know what to do with this situation, this wife, this business, this kid. So the best thing I could come up with after a while was I told my wife that I was going to take these clothes of mine to the cleaners that was next door to my shop, and I went and got on the Greyhound bus and went to San Francisco. And I ran out on that wife and that little baby and that business. And, you know, and when I got there, all I could think about was what I had done. You know, and I couldn't stop thinking about it. But I could always drink, and I started drinking more and more and more. You know, and I went from there to Oregon, and I stayed in Oregon for a while. And you know, that business that I had, I lost the business and the little baby, and my wife moved in with her mother, and I felt like shit. You know, I felt so bad because of what I had done, and I mean. How can you ever go back? How can you ever straighten something like that out? And I was absolutely certain that that was impossible. So I drank. You know, I didn't know anybody in Oregon. The only guy that I did know there, I burned on a deal. You know, I mean, I didn't have any place to go. So I called my mother one day and asked her if she would send me enough money to catch a bus back. And that's when I burnt that guy for that money. He loaned me some money. I got the money from my mother, and I got my check, so that was a good time to leave Oregon. So I left, and I came back, and, you know, I tried to get back with that wife and that baby, and, you know, nothing changed. I still didn't know any more about doing what I was trying to do than I knew when I left, you know. And so I moved in with her parents, and... These were two of the most wonderful people that I ever met. I mean, you know, you would think that her father would want to, like, kill me. But he didn't. You know, he was a Christian man, and you know, I tell you, he took me in and treated me like his son, you know. And I tried. I did the best I could to do what I thought I needed to do to make this thing work. You know, I got a job, and I was catching the bus, like, all over the place, and but it just became something I didn't want to do, or she didn't want to do, or we didn't want to do it anymore, and I left again, and you know, and what I did was I drank a lot. I wasn't working right then. I was drinking. I was my sister's husband was doing a lot of drugs and stuff, and I know this is a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I ain't going to dwell on this. So I started selling speed, you know, and Red Devils and Mini Bennies and Overtrone and those kinds of things. And, you know, it's hard for a mouse to sell cheese. And I got introduced to speed, and I'm going to tell you what, I fell in love, you know, And you know, and what happens, and I'm not trying to push this, is that I drank more. You know, I drank more and more and more and more and more. And, you know, and it didn't get any better. And what I do well is I find the next one, you know. So I found another wife to be. And, you know, and everything was great. I got another job, you know, things were going okay. We moved in together. She was a hard worker. I was working, you know, the drinking was still somewhat controllable. My friend likes to call these wives practice wives. And, so, you know, we got married and, you know, and everything seemed to be doing pretty well on the outside, but inside, you know, I still hadn't taken a course on how to be a husband, and I was struggling with telling the truth. And you know, when I do drugs, which I wasn't doing a lot then, but I was drinking a lot, I tend to stray, you know, and not come home at night and do the kinds of things that alcoholic men do when we drink. And, you know, that's not good for a marriage. And, You know, and it takes its toll on a marriage. And so we decided, or I decided, that the problem wasn't my drinking. The problem was the place I was working in Los Angeles. Because, you know, I grew up in Los Angeles. There was a lot of stress there. It was a tough place to live. So I figured if I moved away from there, everything was going to be all right. So I came down to San Diego and went to work for a company. And my wife came down about a month later. We rented a little apartment. And you know what? It was just like a storybook. I mean, everything was fine. I wasn't drinking. I was going to work. She had a little job. I mean, things were just perfect until that day. Until that day when where I was working, this guy had a pint of IW Heartburn. He said, "Hey, Ronnie, would you like a drink?" And I said, "Well, yes, I would." And, you know, I didn't even think about it, the fact I wasn't drinking anymore. I just, there it was. And, you know, and it just went down real fast. And we bought a house. We bought a house on Spring Valley. And, you know, from the outside, if people didn't know me, or even the people that did know us, you know, they thought we had it going on. I mean, we had a new house. We had a new car. Had a boat. She was doing well. She had just got promoted in her job. And, you know, and it looked like we had it going on, and we didn't, you know. And I was getting worse and worse, and I got reconnected with my love, Speed, and I was worse than I'd ever been, and I wasn't coming home at night, and you know, and she was just getting fed up with it. So we decided that the solution to the problem was to adopt a child. And we did. And, you know, it's funny how something so wonderful can come out of something like that. I mean, I was crazier than a road lizard, you know, and, you know, the lizards that are in the road and dodging all the cars that are going by. And, so we decided we were going to do that, and we went through the screening process. And, you know, the lady used to come out and interview me at work, and I'd be lit up, you know, but I was cool, you know. And she liked me, so we were introduced to this little boy. He was 6 months old, and you know, and we adopted him when he was 6 months old. And you know, I still didn't know how to be a father. I still didn't know how to be a husband. But I was going to give it another shot, you know. And you know, I did the very best I could right then. You know, when he started going to school, you know, I was the one that took him to school. When he had sporting events, he played soccer as a little boy. You know, I was out there hollering and screaming and trying to be a good father. And, you know, later on when he was in different areas, you know, I was always there. But you know what? Alcohol was number one. I mean, it was just number one. Didn't matter how much I loved him, how much I cared about that wife, how much I didn't want to happen, what was happening. I was drinking. And that was that. I mean, that was just the bottom line. I was drinking. Not drinking never crossed my mind. Never did. You know, trying to get away from the problems, trying to figure out why these things were happening. Yeah, that was important. But not drinking, that never came up, you know. So, you know, I'm getting worse now. And you know, I was fortunate enough to buy another business. And I'm doing a lot of speed, and I'm drinking a lot, and I'm not coming home. One night, she came down to my shop, and a friend of mine and myself were in there doing some things we probably shouldn't have been doing. And she came in, and, you know, it was an ugly scene, you know. And she went down the next day and got a restraining order on me. And I knew at that time that she thought I had a problem with alcohol. And I knew that there was something I could probably do, and that would be to make this futile attempt to go to Alcoholics Anonymous, and that would probably take the heat off, you know. But that was really a half measures thing. You know, half measures. You know, half measures is like that. That son of a preacher who went to his dad and said, "Hey, Dad, when can we talk about me driving the car?" And Dad said, "Well, when you start reading the Bible more often, I see you improve your grades at school and you get that haircut." So, you know, about 6 months later, the kid comes back to his dad and he said, "Hey, Dad, can we talk about me driving the car?" He said, "Okay." He said, "I have noticed you've been reading the Bible more often and you have improved your grades, but you still got that long hair." And the kid says, "Well, Jacob had long hair. And Moses had long hair. And Jesus had long hair." And the dad said, "Yeah, and you noticed they walked everywhere they went." So, half measures didn't work then, and it didn't work for me. You know, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I went to the treatment center, and I went there, and my first meeting that I went to voluntarily was to Easy Does It speaker meeting. And I think I went in to the treatment center on Thursday, and Easy Does It speaker meeting was on Friday. And I didn't go there because I wanted to get sober. I went there because if you were going to be in this treatment center, you had to go to these meetings that they took you to. So I went there, and I stayed in there for 28 days, and I heard what they were saying, and I believed what they had, but I never thought that I would ever have it. You know, even though I kind of wanted it a little bit, I didn't think, first of all, I knew I wasn't going to be able to do what was required to get it. I knew I wasn't going to be able to go to them damn meetings and take them steps that I knew I couldn't do. You know, and not drinking was probably not something that I was doing. And speed, I was not willing to even not even talk about. I wasn't giving it up, you know. So, you know, I went through the 28-day program. I got out, and you know, when I got out, things, I got to say, things were better. That's when I got back in the big bed, okay, when I got out of that treatment center and I wasn't drinking. And I stayed sober for about 8 months, you know, and when I was leaving that treatment center, one of the things that the counselor, if you will, told me, he said, "Well, Ronnie, you're probably only going to," and I remember him saying this, "you're probably going to only need to go to one or two meetings a week because it doesn't look like you were a real bad alcoholic." Now, my wife was sitting next to me, and I'm saying, "I told you." But you know, I didn't know that was inaccurate. I didn't know that I needed to go to meetings every day and get a sponsor and take some direction and take the steps. And that's what I needed to do. But I did not really know that. So I went to an aftercare meeting that they had one night a week. And I went to, I think it was Easy Does a speaker meeting, because that was a meeting that I was familiar with. And I went to those two meetings, or that meeting and a half. And I tried not to drink. You know, and I didn't drink. I didn't drink for 8 months. I didn't do nothing for 8 months. And things, some of the things got better, some of the things got worse, you know, because the problems that I had created when I was drinking hadn't gone anywhere. She was still resentful and angry, and she had met this person, this Al-Anon person. Watch out for him. If you're screwing around. If you're doing okay, love them. But I wasn't. And this person was telling this, my wife at that time, that to take some action contrary to what I thought was good. And she threw my ass out. I like to say we broke up, but that ain't what happened. She threw my ass out. the day before Thanksgiving, I got a divorce papers served by the marshal with a restraining order in it and all the terms of surrender. Yeah. And, you know, that was a day that I'll never forget, because some things happened that day that I didn't expect. When I got that thing, the first thing I felt was anger. How could she do this to me? I'm going to call her. I know if she just hears what I have to say, that she'll understand that this ain't right. And I called her, and that didn't happen quite the way I thought. You know, she told me I had 2 days to get my stuff out. And those 2 days, she'd be out of town, you know. So I could have anything I wanted, but I just had, except her, of course, and the kid. And then what I experienced was, I loved her, and my son I loved dearly, you know, and now I wasn't going to be able to have them. But on the other hand, over here, now I was going to be able to drink and use like I wanted to, and I didn't have to come home on time. I didn't have to pretend like I wasn't doing this. I didn't have to do nothing except I could drink and use like I wanted to, and I did. And, you know, I made countless vain attempts to get that wife back. And, you know, and I got to the place where she had gotten a declaration where I couldn't visit him unless I'd been sober for 24 hours. And, you know, I loved him dearly, but I couldn't stay sober for 15 minutes at that time. And, so I went on doing the things that I was doing. And you know, it got worse, and it got really worse, and it got to the point where nobody wanted to be around me. I was homeless and didn't know it. You know, I was sleeping on the floor in the back of this shoe shop, which was bad. I mean, it was bad, and I didn't have any hot water. You know, and you know, none of those things really mattered to me. The thing that I was really happy about was I could drink and use. But, you know, it got to the place where I didn't want to anymore, but I could not do it. I didn't want what was coming with it, but I didn't want to stop, because I didn't know that, this is going to sound crazy, I didn't know that that was a problem, you know. That was always the solution for me. Remember I told you as a young boy I found out that that's the stuff that made me okay? That never stopped making me okay. That made me okay forever, you know. And now I'm at a place where I got problems. You know, it starts out as fun, then it goes to fun with problems, and then just problems. And I was at just problems right then. And so all I was doing at that point was doing drugs, calling this dude every day to bring me by an issue, and that was it, you know, and trying to get enough money to make it for another couple of days. You know, I had gotten 6 months behind in my rent at my shop, and I had a customer who used to come in from time to time, and, you know, he'd come in, and one day he came in, and I guess I was especially bad that day, and he said, "Easy does it." Well, I had been, like I say, I'd been in a treatment center, so I knew that that was an AA slogan, so I wanted to respond, and I said, yeah, keep it, I don't know what I said, I responded with some kind of an AA slogan, you know, and that was it. And then he left, and he'd come back in a couple of months to have some more work done, just as a customer, you know. And this happened two or three times. And then one day he came in, he said, "Hey, Ronnie, you want to go to a meeting with me?" "Oh, no, I'm much too busy for that." You know, I was cool. He left, you know, and then he came back again, and I guess I was a little worse. You know, and I was a little, just a touch more desperate, and maybe just a hair more, maybe I just coming off a spree. And he said, "Ronnie, would you like to go to a meeting with me?" And I said, "Okay." And we went to Drunks Only when it was on Camino del Rio South. And man, I don't think I ever felt so bad in my life. I walked in there and everybody looked like doctors and lawyers, and I was bad. I mean, I was bad. And I was dirty, And I went in that meeting and I was sitting there and, oh man, I felt bad. I felt so low. And so I went to the meeting, and then after the meeting, I left. And he took me back to my shop, and he would come back again from time to time and ask me if I'd like to go to a meeting. And a couple times, once or twice, I said yeah, and then once or twice, I said no. And then and there was always, you know, 3 weeks, a month in between. It was never like the next day. And then he came in this day, and he gave me the 15-minute version of his story. He 12-stepped me right there in his shop. And you know, and he wasn't at all like me, you know. The things he did were different than what I did, but he had a smile on his face, and I didn't. And I believed that, even though I didn't think I could do it, I believed that if I did what he told me to do, I would get better. But I didn't think I could do it. So he gave me this 15-minute version and his patented laugh, and he left. You know, and I didn't drink that night. And that was the first night. That was the first night I didn't drink. And then something weird happened. He came in the next day. And he came in the next day, and I asked him as he walked in, I said, "Hey, Don, will you be my sponsor?" And he said, "Are you willing to go to any lengths to stay sober?" I had no idea what that meant. I said, "Yes." He said, "Are you willing to take suggestions?" I had no idea what that meant. And I said, "Yes." And he said, "Ronnie, I'd be glad to be your sponsor." You know, and I can't tell you that everything got great right away, because it didn't. But I can tell you that a change began in my life. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about what happened. That very first day gave me an assignment that the people I sponsor, I give to them. His sponsor gave it to him, and I think his sponsor gave it to him. And that is, he told me, "Ronnie, I want you to read step 3 in the 12 and 12 every day for 30 days. And if you miss a day, I want you to start over again." I couldn't hardly read. I swear to God, I couldn't hardly read. I had to get one of them little dime store dictionaries, and I did it. You know, I read. Took me 3 hours, I think, the first time to read 6 pages. You know, and I did it, and then I would do it, and I'd read it for 15 days, and then I missed a day. And then what do? Do I lie? I can do this. He'll never know. 10 minutes left. Okay. So I did it. You know, I read that step 3 for 30 days. And I'm still living in the back of my shop. He gave me a 30-day subscription to the YMCA so I'd have some place to go shower. You know, like I said earlier, he didn't come in and preach Alcoholics Anonymous to me. He showed me what it meant. He showed me what it meant to give somebody love just because it was needed and not because, you know, of any other reason. So, you know, Don would pick me up and take me to the Great Factor Group, which is my home group. And he would take me there. He took me there for, I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks. And then I had to get there for myself, you know. And I had to get it. I got a commitment. And that first commitment, I was the greeter. And, you know, I never missed a day being the greeter, and I was never late. And his office, by the way, was directly across the street from my shop. I mean, I don't mean like over here or over there. I mean directly across. And he used to come over to my shop all the time. And so one day I was going to go across the street to his office, and I went out and I walked across the street, and he was standing on his porch, you know, and smiling at me, you know, and I'm walking across because, I mean, I'm 6 months sober or something, and, you know, I got it going on, you know. And so I'm walking across the street, and he's smiling at me, and I walk across the street, and I get about as far as from here to Shine, and he says, "Go back to the corner and cross with the fucking light." Just like that. And I said, "What kind of shit is this?" And I went back to the light and I crossed with it and I came back and he smiled. He put his arm on my shoulder and he looked at me and he said, "You know, Ronnie, the rules apply to you too." And you know what? They do. It means that when I come to a stoplight, I'm supposed to stop, not just roll through it. So, you know, and then we took the steps. 90 days sober, he started me on the steps, you know, and I didn't think I could do that inventory. You know, I didn't think I could do it, but I did it. You know, I didn't think that I could tell anybody about it, but I did it. You know, this is kind of a special place for me because I was here 3 years ago to the day. You know, February 7, 2010, I had open heart surgery. I had a quadruple bypass. And the guy who used to get the speakers here, Larry Dixon, came to see me the day after I had open heart surgery, you know, and it was sure good to see him, you know. And he said, "Ronnie, would you be our speaker next month?" You know what? I would have did anything as long as I didn't die. I'd be glad to, Larry. So I was up here, you know, 3 years ago. But, you know, Don was my sponsor for about 10 years. And then he had some medical problems and he passed away. And, you know, Don saved my life. And when I say that, I'm not bullshitting. Don saved my life. Because if I'd have been left in that shoe shop, I would be dead by now. That's my sponsor over there, Tom. Tom and Marty. Tom was my best man when I got married, you know, and that's his sponsor. And, you know, I got a lot of friends here tonight. My wife came with me. We had a little issue on time, but we got here on time. You know, I'm real grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, that sponsor instilled in me a love for Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I've been sober for a while now. And I love Alcoholics Anonymous. Don't ask me. Ask the people that know me what I think of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I bullshit about a lot of stuff, but I don't bullshit about Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the real deal, you know. And I really want to say to the new people, you know what? I'm no different than anybody else. You know, this is what we do. You know, we come here, shout out. If you ain't shout out, what you here for? You know. Yeah. You know, if you ain't shout out, you know, I pray you get shout out. I pray you get into a place where you don't give a shit what you got to do. You know, and I pray you come here and you find one of these crusty old bastards that look like they could never care about nobody and find out how wrong you are, you know. So, you know, it's always nice to come here and always nice to do anything I can do for Alcoholics Anonymous because you've done so much for me. And the last thing I want to say is that this guy, Ted Howell, used to bring tapes to the meeting. He was one of the founders of that my home group, and he used to bring tapes to the meeting. And I thought he didn't like me, but he wouldn't talk to me much. And I found out he just don't talk to newcomers because he hate to see them die, you know. But he used to give me tapes, you know, and he gave me this one tape, and I was playing it, and it was this Canadian dude. He was, you know, can I say it was Canadian? And I couldn't understand him too well, so at the end of his speech, he said, "Now, you probably won't remember my name, and you probably won't remember anything I said, but remember this. If you take care of your brothers and sisters, your father will take care of you. So, you probably won't remember anything I said, And you probably won't remember my name, but you remember this. If you take care of your brothers and sisters, your Father will take care of you. So thank you.